Big thanks to Roz and Emma and Graham for driving us through the afternoon after a few little technical difficulties. We are on air. It's Friday, the 24th of January, and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the official chart show with Blauna Tracy at 7 o'clock, Shane McGrath and Brendan Devenny start the intercounty season for us with the preview of the weekend's Allianz League action. In soccer, Alan Colley and Fergal Brennan discuss a late reprieve for Manchester United and look ahead to the weekend's Premier League. Plus, it wouldn't be Friday without Jane Mangan on racing. If you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552 or WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
Game on. Check out the podcast on the RTE Radio Player app.
Alan Colley is with me in the studio. Alan, you made it all the way from stormy Malahide.
I did, Marie. We shouldn't be laughing, really, because what a horrendous storm. Yeah, yeah, and so much damage done. We were without power ourselves from 9 a.m. this morning, so strange day. And yeah, I'm just kind of assessing the damage as the day has progresses all over the country, and it's really bad everywhere. So they told us this, but yeah, some of the videos you're seeing and from different places around the country, it was really, really bad, Marie. But I don't think anyone was hurt, which is most important, but obviously a lot of structural damage done to places.
Yeah, it's scary enough, and people were worried, and rightly so. And we've seen some of the damage around the country, lots of people without power, some homes damaged, and lots of sports venues as well. And one of them was caught the attention of quite a lot of people because it was the Connacht GAA Airdome in Bacon, in Mayo. And we all know that that's been a great facility, especially when the weather's really bad, to be able to go indoors and play matches there. But it was hit by the storm. It's been totally destroyed, so they're going to have to rebuild it. It was only opened in 2020, and it hosted even some of the FPD League games as well. Lots of people use it. People actually see it as a venue, somewhere to go, something different to do, but they're going to have to rebuild it. Let's hear now from the Connacht GAA Secretary, John Prenti, who told RTÉ all about what's happened.
John, I suppose maybe just take us through. You were saying that you were here last night with a number of your colleagues keeping an eye on the facility as the storm started to hit. You thought everything was actually okay?
Yeah, any time we have a promise of a storm, that we get a group of us come here and we look after the pressure, we do the various things that have to be done, and all of that was done. And we left here at probably 2:30, and by 4:15, and by 4:00, and I could see that the dome was gone. And I suppose the good thing in that is that we were gone when it came, because we would have been found today dead. Simple as that. We had no way of getting out. Killed, stranded. So thankfully we're alive to tell the tale, and we'll get another drone.
When you were here last night, did you feel that maybe it was secure and that it would actually be able to withstand the conditions?
Yeah, when we were here at that time, say around 2:00, we had a storm about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and it was harder to maintain it at that time than it was last night when we left, so we were happy enough. Obviously, if you walk around the site, like, it had to be swirling at a ferocious rate, because it took doors on one side and not on the other. If you look down at the old AstroTurf, the lights off the dome were down there in the back, and the goalposts in the far end, like 100, 200 metres away. So it was some storm.
I was just going to make that point. Obviously, would you believe that the winds that hit here last night do this extensive damage? It must have been severe.
Yeah, I've seen several storms in my time going back to Debbie, and I never saw a storm like this. Never, even at home last night, it was frightening. You'd have to be worried when you were in bed, waiting for the phone to ring or the thing to pop off. I was worried about my own house and mine, the dome. And thankfully, the rest of the building, it took a few knocks, but nothing major. And the pitches, nothing that can't be fixed rapidly. But the AstroTurf and the dome, they are the two major issues at the minute.
It has become an iconic structure. People from all across the country competing in games here. It's a big blow to yourselves, I suppose, having had something so successful for this to happen.
Look, it's a big blow, but as I said, we'll rise again. But it's a big disappointment. We've had bookings for up to next September every weekend, including tomorrow. We had the Frisbee Championship here tomorrow, and the next day, obviously, that's gone. We had kids coming from all over the country. Last week we had a group of children from Mourne Abbey, Clyde Rovers and Cork come up here for the day. That is a regular thing here on the weekends, and unfortunately that's gone for the time being, but it'll happen again.
And can I ask, I understand that the facility was supposed to host some Sigerson Cup and Fitzgibbon Cup games. What will have to happen in that circumstance now?
Look, we're determined to host Fitzgibbon, Ashburn and Sigerson Cup. Obviously none of the games will be played in the dome. Maybe by the time we get the site cleared, we might be able to use the dome pitch. But we'll have to look at the timing of some of the games now. Some of them are going on that we need lights. We might have to look at that again. We have three pitches with lights, but we have to do a bit of job now. The AstroTurf that we didn't think was damaged a few minutes ago. The grass pitches are playable now. We think we just have a few things to check on the goalposts. And we're all looking at the nets, all the kind of stuff, looking at the fencing. It's all in situ. So I don't think we're going to have any problem with outdoor games in the future. And as soon as possible, we'll have indoor games again.
I can just finally ask about how challenging will it be to rebuild what you had here? I think it cost around between 3.5 to 4 million euro. Were provisions in place, insurance, all that kind of thing, but will it be a challenge, or is it doable?
Look at it, people, when we built this place, when we opened this in 2020, in July 2020, nobody believed, even 5 hours before it went up, that it happened. But it did happen, and it'll happen again.
Now, that was Connacht GAA Secretary John Prenti explaining what happened to the Connacht GAA Air Dome over the last few hours with the storm, and also the consequences for the many people that use it on a regular basis. And the big hope there is that they will get it rebuilt and get it rebuilt as soon as possible, because it's such a brilliant facility for them to have and for everybody to use and go to. And as Fergal O'Brien, the a reporter said there, it's become quite of an iconic location as well, an iconic venue. Many people really enjoy getting the opportunity to play there, Al. But listening to John Prenti there, like, it is quite difficult to start all over again, and there's lots of consequences. And, you know, even things like kids coming at the weekend, they're going to have some Frisbee championships. I'm sure there was games scheduled, all that sort of stuff. So, like, it's a huge blow to the area.
Massively, Marie, yeah, but he's a really good positive outlook, John, to be fair, listening to that interview. As he said, once the most important thing, that no one was harmed. Obviously, it's disappointing to lose the dome because, as you said, it's an unbelievable facility. I've yet to be down, Marie, but when I seen the pictures of it today, mm-hmm. I couldn't believe, actually, that it was blown away like that and damaged so badly. But he does have a really good outlook. As he said, there's little bits of damage to the pitch which can be fixed as well, and they're fully committed. The Connacht GAA Council, I think, are fully committed to rebuilding it as well, that it was fully insured.
Yeah.
So that's the way to look at it. I know it was really difficult for them in the early days of probably trying to get that in place and get that in situ, but they've achieved that. So that was the hardest hurdle that they've probably had to overcome. The fact that this has been damaged in the storm, as he said, we can rebuild it, and that's the outlook to have on it. Because it is, by all accounts, it's absolutely brilliant, and the amount of usage it gets as well. I'm surprised more people around haven't actually put up domes in different places around the country as well, because this one I know has been hugely successful for all different sports, as mm-hmm. you say, and not just kind of elite level inter-county teams, for school teams going down playing in the Frisbee championships at the weekend. And with the weather that we have, especially in winter times, I'm surprised there's not more of these around the country.
Yeah, they'd be a great investment.
Absolutely.
And multi-sport as well, so that different organisations can use it, because they're needed so often. But it's not the only place that has been damaged by the storm as well. We saw some pictures from Longford Town, Al, coming out as well, and the stand and their facilities there seem to be quite badly damaged. Kilmallock GAA and a couple of other grounds around the place as well, with stands that have been hit by the storm and blown down. And even though it might not be the pitch facility, when something happens within a complex, it takes a while for it to reopen again. So there'll be lots of sports clubs who'll be feeling the consequences of this storm.
Yeah, 100%. Especially when it's so difficult to run these clubs now as well, Marie, you know. So that's the last thing that they need. It's hard enough for them as it is. But then when you have structural damage to a stand or to part of the ground, of course it's a setback for them. I saw the videos from Longford Town as well. That wall, which I think is there probably since day one. And that's a big blow for them as well, Longford Town. They've found it difficult in recent times being in Division 1 as well, not getting the crowds what they'd expect, whereas if they were a Premier Division team. So, of course, anything like that is a setback for clubs, because it is very difficult for everybody now to keep the whole show on the road.
OK, well, look, we'll be keeping an eye on any other venues as well that get damaged, and we hope that everybody gets their facilities rebuilt and reopen again, because we'll have a very busy year ahead of sports. There's so much to look forward to, and for a lot of people it's getting underway this weekend, because the Allianz Football and Hurling leagues are back, but particularly the Football League, because we're going to see the new rules in full flight. I'm not sure how straightforward it's going to be, but I'm definitely looking forward to it. Brendan Devaney, former Donegal footballer, is with us as well. Brendan, just before we get on to the new rules, how are you? How's the storm up in Donegal?
Yeah, it's pretty bad, Marie. It's candlelit tears. Very romantic, actually.
And here you are talking to myself and Alan.
Yeah, but you wouldn't know what'll happen here tonight. But yeah, listen, no power as it
baby
is,
own so. In 9 months.
Will you light a candle for me as well, Brendan, will you?
We'll have to call Stormzy. Yeah, listen, it's I took a spin out there, Marie, to get a a couple of supplies. You know, the whole place goes mental there last night. All the stores, you know, they wouldn't have cleaned out. It was like real Armageddon. But yeah, trees down everywhere and very little homes with power here at the minute. But listen, you know, game on, made the call and I'm ready.
Oh, well, look, you never let us down anyway. Come we on, know Brendan. That for sure. So, Brendan, like it's such a, there's so much positivity around the new rules coming in and the fact that we're actually going to see them now over the next couple of days is going to be brilliant. But there's a little bit of apprehension too, because there's a lot of change and it's a lot for people to get their heads around and to adapt to. Not every county will have the players that they need to adapt to them in such a short space of time and develop what they need to actually make an impact in this new game now, which essentially it's going to be in many ways. How are you feeling about them?
Yeah, the dynamics are huge. You know, you talk about there, you're right, Marie, personnel. You then, I suppose, of what type of coach have you got? How quick do you get up to speed? What's your opposition like? What are they doing? What are you doing? So the question marks around it are massive. You have new management teams in place in many teams, you know, across the divisions. And that they're going to be getting the old players in the middle of that, you know, trying to, I suppose, create their own tactical stamp on the team. And you're not going to know what the tactics are, because speaking to people that have been involved in inter-county friendlies, the games have been mad. I mean, massively high scoring matches, way off the chart stuff. So teams are really trying to get the grips with the quick interchange, with the possibilities for the attack, the kick pass, and real you know, crazy things going on in game. So it's very hard to predict really what'll happen until we get into it, and people then start to suss out how they you know, how they act and attack, and then how they try and stop other teams in terms of what they're going forward. But listen, it's going to be one hell of an exciting ride.
Yeah, well, let's hear now from Eamon Fitzmaurice, former Kerry manager, footballer, and also part of the F4C.
I think that the proper stress test of the rules starts now, you know, in terms of the inter-county teams have had a couple of months preparing for them, and they'll be starting to find the possibilities, the loopholes, the issues, all of that will start to come to bear now over the next couple of weeks. So there's been a lot of talk, I suppose, over the last couple of months about them. And, you know, there's a lot of speculation about what the different rules are going to mean and that kind of thing. So it'll be great to see it play out now. So really looking forward to the weekend, as I think is everyone. We haven't had an inter-county match of competitive football since last July, which is hard to believe. So huge appetite for games there again, which is great. I think when everyone gets used to it, it's just going to be a natural game of football. I think it'll be quicker. I think it'll be more front to back. I think there will be more contests. I think there will be more turnovers. I think players will need to look up and play with their head up a bit more. But there are still going to be, you can still defend with 11. You can still go, if you go, particularly if you bring your goalkeeper beyond the halfway line, you can still slow it down and play, you know, a more possession-based game there and set up kind of orchestrated chances for yourself. So there will be still aspects of that, but I do expect it to be a better spectacle. And I think as well, a big point is that there will be different styles will emerge through this year, for the simple reason that everyone's starting from the same start point. So different people are going to have different ideas on what the best way to make the rules work for their personnel. And the second thing is that you're going to be able to react to each other, because the game had gone to a place where if the opposition got away the short kick out or got away a kick out at all and the keeper came out, well, the kind of set thing to do was just back off them to at least the halfway line, because there was no point in engaging them up there because they were going to come out through you anyway. So you ended up with a slow attack, set defences, and both teams had to play that way. If one team decided to play that way, both teams nearly had to play that way. Whereas I think there'd be more room for manoeuvre in terms of trying to impose your own style on the opposition and not just having to react to their style, which to me is a huge positive. And I think that was one of the things always with football, that if you were playing Donegal, they might be playing a passing type game. If you were playing Cork, they'd have strong runners, or Mayo, strong runners coming from the half-back line. Kerry, Dublin might have been inclined to kick it a bit more. Meath, very traditional kicking team. You know, you had different styles associated with the different counties, whereas that had gone. It was a one-size-fit-all. And hopefully now we will see different styles again. But I don't think it's going to be a vastly different game, but I'm hoping it will be a better spectacle. It'll be a more enjoyable game to play, and I think it'll be a more enjoyable game to coach as well.
Brendan Devaney, do you go along with that it's not going to be a vastly different game?
No, certainly not. I think it's going to be, particularly as everybody gets used to it. I mean, I think there's so many things in here. I mean, you could spend hours talking about, you know, if you tried to take it all on board, but there's key things happening in there, particularly the goal, starting with the goalie's kick out and the pressure is going to come on them. It's much harder to get the short away. You know, obviously the 3v3 is massive, but the small things in there that tap and go, even attitude towards, you know, cynical fouling, moving things up 50 yards. You know, most games that used to be, because they were low scoring, could be decided by a point that everything was knife edge. So it's not going to be like that anymore. There's going to be much more opportunities to score, and of course, score two-pointers as well. And I think of all people, you know, Eamon's own county, Kerry is the biggest beneficiary of this, because I think they never got to grips with the tactical modern game. They never liked it, and it was like they never seemed to enjoy the football enough for me. It was like a weight bearing on them. And Dublin, it was easier for them because they were the way they came at the time, and they came once 2014 happened. Jim Gavin locked everything down and went very tactical, and they just became an unbeatable force. And I think for Kerry, even though they won All Ireland different years, they didn't really. So this is allowing the game to go back and be a very skillful game. And I think the biggest thing in it, Marie, and you touched on it in terms of personnel, is everybody's going to have to be a football player now. You know, before teams were carrying workhorses and you could play the percentage as long as you get it and get up and down the pitch and pass it to somebody else. Now you're going to have to play because you're going to be met one on one. You're going to have one on one situations. You're going to have to beat people and going to set up plays. So I think the skills of the game, even underneath or overseeing all these rule changes, will rise. But, I mean, it's just impossible to say. But just the same way from talking to people that have had friendlies, the scoring has gone way up. And really, it's end to end. And even talking to Jim McGuinness, he was talking about the lack. The game never settled in the any pattern. And for modern coaches who love control, Marie, the control is going to be way out the window.
Yeah, it sounds like it could be a bit kamikaze as well. And I love the fact that there's people that are watching quite a lot of it, and then there's people that haven't seen any of it. And you're hearing all these mad stories about goalkeepers getting like 3-1 and sprinting up and down the field and being absolute flyers. So I can't wait just to sit down and spend some time actually trying to figure out what the trends are and how it's unfolding. And we do have great games. And I think as well, Brendan, because we haven't had intercounty Gaelic football for so long, it feels like the biggest gap and that so much has happened. And then this weekend, we're going to be met with all these brilliant clashes. And you mentioned Kerry there, and how particularly they could be the big beneficiaries of it because of the skills that they have in their game and the type of personnel and player that they have and the pure football. But they're going to come up against a team, Donegal, who in ways might be the opposite to that because they are so tactical and because Jim McGuinness always has something up his sleeve. So it could be a really interesting test to see if Kerry have actually adapted to this new game.
Yeah, and I suppose Kerry at home and, you know, Donegal have four home games themselves, and you would think that, you know, at nobody, like you say, Donegal have a poor record. Nobody has a good record going to Kerry because just historically they're such a top team and they do turn it on at home. I suppose Keane O'Neill's left Galway's on their coaching, should be a big addition to Jack O'Connor's team. You know, Aidan Spillane has retired, so is Stephen O'Neill, and Killian Burke has gone to Australia. Sorry, and I'm just looking at a Jeremy O'Connor quote there previously, just on about the, you know, the pain of back-to-back defeats or failures, as they call it, because there's just one carrot for Kerry. But I think in many ways, you know, the fact that it's wide open again now and they're not going to be facing that 15 inside the 45, they will get chances to play. David Clifford, of course, is on an extended break, so he won't be around this weekend. I know Paddy's just back training as well. Donegal have a few new people, and McFadden Ferry is back, and the young fella Finbar Rorty, who was underage last year, he's back in too. And there's a few players in there, Michael Murphy, you might have heard of, coming back as well, Marie. So listen, as you said there's so many things going on. The football's been away so long. You've got all these new managements, you've got the new rules, so there's a massive hunger for it. But certainly it's a massive test for Donegal to go down there and to try and take them. And of course Donegal in 2011 had the exact same year as they had last year in terms of winning Division 2 Ulster, and we're beating the semi-final. So Donegal fans will be looking for a repeat of that again. And it's interesting, Murphy being back, McBertie's still playing, McFadden is in the background as well. So, you know, a lot of positive signs for Donegal in there. But can the 11 that Donegal have in their defensive shape, can it still be solid against the 11 that's coming at them? That's the real interesting backdrop to all this, Marie, because when you think about the switch in play from left to right, when teams try to switch it quick, there'll be another three defenders, six players in that zone. So when the switch happens, there should be an opportunity to get in and get a shot away for the two-pointer or the pointer. That should happen a bit quicker. But if a game enters a certain passage of play, there still might be that keep ball where a team is looking to defend the arc and you've got that team holding the ball around the middle. That's the only time I can see the game maybe get a bit pedestrian.
Brendan, just on Jim, and obviously the success that he's had, but he's always been known as quite negative, conservative, or whatever phrase you want to put on it, but being successful. Do you think with the new rules, he has it in him to flip that and maybe let the shackles off? And you spoke there about Curry being the big beneficiaries because they're so skillful. Do you think Donegal and Jim has it in him to maybe go out and play on the front foot and see something totally different than what we've seen before?
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. We've seen different teams do it. We've seen it a couple of times with Donegal and at the start of Jim's tenure, and you thought they were going to go with a high press and maybe flip everything on its head. But then they did go back to a very possession-based keep ball type game. So, you know, Armagh a couple of seasons ago went that way, Alan, where they had the big men inside and they looked like they could tear up at times, and then it didn't work for them, and then they ripped it all back and went back to this very, very tactical way of playing, as we've seen right on the All-Ireland final. Very, very zonal, tactical based, and it made the game, kind of crippled the game. That's why I think these rules, you know, are so vital. But I just think, I think once the team gets into that transitional play and they can kick it and you have a link, so will they keep a two up and a link man? Will a second link man try and get in and try and get the kick? And if it's not on, then they'll try and work it. So it'll be interesting how that happens. But I still think teams will try their best to get that, particularly across the arc. I think that's going to be the kill zone in there, because you won't want to concede the two-pointer. And if someone should get in, just in behind you and maybe get a score. So as long as your goal's protected, maybe the two-pointer, you know, I think that scenario will be. So it'll be interesting, because Donegal's launch pad for attack last year, you know, you had the likes of Bogan actually playing cornerback. So, you know, at times lining out to that, it was crazy stuff. So it was after you say, we're going to get the ball and then we're going to come at you in a complete running game. All that has to change this year. You know, the likes of McCall will need at least Curran inside with him. Donegal haven't been playing. Donegal times last year played with one recognised full backline type player. So that will have to change this year. So it's a matter of that balance as well. They have Patton that is an unreal kick out. So whether or not they'll need Murphy and the sticks or not, I doubt it very much.
Who knows? Galway and Armagh is going to be an absolute cracker. And it's again because we haven't seen, it's been such a break, and it was it's turning into a nice little bit of a rivalry between these two sides as well. Out of those two, who do you think is going to adapt best to what's coming down this weekend?
Yeah, I think they both have strengths. I mean, of course, all Ireland finalists last year, you have to say two of the best squads in Ireland. Of course, Galway, with all these injuries, you know, particularly Walsh, Comer, McDaid, they kind of limped into it, and somehow, you know, you'd think now not only getting these guys injury-free, but probably building them up in the off-season that they don't get injured again, I think is a big thing for Galway. Of course, Mickey Graham left Leitrim, joined them under a wee bit of a cloud. David Morris, Cora Finn is in there as well. So big, big experience coming in. A lot of Galway people happy about that, about Morris coming in and his effect on it. Of course, Gleeson has a great kick-out, but there's a fella, Conor Flaherty. Claire Galway plays out the pitch. He's their sub-keeper, so you're just wondering, is that a possibility, as you're saying, Marie? Is there a possibility of that type of player coming in to maybe, particularly if you're chasing the game, that it can be the plus one inside? So loads of options for Galway. Big men around the middle as well. I mean, Armagh, you know, same thing. You know, Mernon, Turbot, you'd think perfect inside, particularly with the passing ability of the likes of Rian O'Neill out there. They last year at times, you know, the likes of Creeley and Grimley would have dropped in from midfield. So again, that ability to go long inside and of power is going to be huge. So you're going to try and get mismatches with players in there. But again, Armagh, backroom team, as we know, McKeever in there with McGeaney, you know, Big Donaghy in there, and of course Conleith Gilligan. Those guys will be, you know, absolutely trawling through all the rules to see how that best suit their squad. So that's a fascinating game down in Salt Hill under lights.
Yeah, it is, and it's great for the fans as well to get that under lights opportunity too. Look, I guess people are really curious as well about Dublin and the transition period that they're in at the moment, because we're used to them being one of the most dominant sides coming out, but yet we're in a situation now where we actually don't know what they're going to bring at all. Brendan, what do you think?
Yeah, interestingly, you know, they've loaded of new players and trialing players. Obviously, the Cooler boys coming to the fore there. You know, they look very comfortable playing in Croke Park. Massive pace, fitness. You know, obviously, Fenton McCarthy have retired. You know, again, a typical Dublin. We don't know what's happening with Cluxton. You know, is he there? Is he not? Comerford, of course, was injured. Picked up an injury last year. He'll be coming back in. I think, you know, Small, McCaffrey, likes a Mannion. Are they going to be part of it? You know, they've got a few additions under their squad as well, Marie. So it's hard to know just what they're going to come with. But certainly I think, unlike Kerry, you know, if Dublin have an off year, they don't compete, there doesn't seem to be the same kind of negativity around it. You know, they seem to take it that it didn't work out this year, let's come back again. You know, I know Desi Farrell has faced a wee bit of heat over time in terms of defeats and where they're going. But I certainly think they seem to be a bit more comfortable in their own skin into this. I know, you know, you have Davy Byrne's going to be back in there. Owen O'Donnell, of course, he's come in as well, joined from the hurling squad. And James Madden's back from AFL as well. So players in there, you know, how will they fit into the system? But there's certainly, as Dublin is, they're going to have a brilliant squad and they'll be near the title again, you'd imagine.
Yeah, they play Mayo in Croke Park at 7:30 tomorrow. Tyrone, Derry then is the last Division 1 game. And look, it's a bit like we're talking about Dublin and the unknown as well. You could probably say the same about these two counties too, just given maybe last year and how it all played out for them. But, you know, it's a new year, it's new rules, it's opportunities really, isn't it?
New rules, but just the same love. They love each other, these two teams. They love each other. You know, this is going to be a real comfy, nice opener. Shake hands and then get the wee kidney searcher. But listen, you know, two new managements. You know, fascinating stuff. Backdrop to this, Paddy Tallien. Well, not mention he's from Tyrone. Paul McGaver's in this backroom team there. You know, the likes of Kevin McGaughan, Paul McFlynn in there. So, you know, huge experience in that team, and that saga of Derry's be put to bed. So how the players respond to this will be interesting. Marie, can they get back to knocking on the door like they were? They'll want a good league campaign anyway. You know, I don't think anybody particularly wants to be in a final because it's a lot of teams, it's the week before a potential championship game. So a lot of teams, this is the most ultra-competitive Division 1 I've seen in a long time. And Malachy Rourke, Ryan Porter coming in, of course, the run that Errigal made, you know, the talent that they have from underage coming through as well is massive. But they all want to start, like there's no games in here. Maybe you can kind of say, oh, I think at home, we could get two there and two there, and then if we pick up one away from home, we might get in there. I don't think any team is looking at anything like that. I think every game, every team has a stab at taking the 2 points, and that's why for Tyrone, you know, they'll be looking to get off with a good start. But you know, the derby, there's always a bit of bite in that one.
Well, Brendan, I hope that your electricity comes back by tomorrow and you actually get to watch these games because it'll be tough.
Well, Marie, do you know where I'm at tomorrow? I'm actually in Croke Park. The Donegal team, Leif Paddock, are playing Carrow.
Oh, brilliant.
In the Junior All-Ireland. And then I'm going down to Kerry then, to Kerry Donegal. So,
living your best life.
I don't really care. I'll be around to
You are dead right. Enjoy every bit of it. And thank you so much, as always, Brendan. Alan and I were remarking just before we went on air that it's great to have you back. So,
yeah, good to be back.
Great, the dogs. There's no more, folks. Good honey. Yeah. Looking forward to it.
Super. Thanks, Brendan. Talk to you soon. That was Brendan Devenny there bringing us up to speed on how he thinks all of the Gaelic football matches over the weekend, the Division 1 Gaelic football matches, are going to play out. We're really looking forward to seeing the best players in the game adapt and try out and showcase these new rules that are going to be on display, all worth tuning in for. But we've hurling as well. Don't forget the hurling. The hurling always lives up to its billing. Shane McGrath will be with us very shortly to set us up for round one. 2FM. Now, welcome back to the programme. Alan Cawley is with me in studio and we're looking forward to a great weekend of sport because the Allianz Leagues are back and there's such a huge amount of anticipation surrounding the Gaelic football, the new rules, how teams are going to adapt, who's going to have the right personnel, what the goalkeepers are going to do, the discipline, the dissent, everything really, Al. And I guess what's topping it all off, though, is the fact that, and Brendan Devenny mentioned it there, this is such a competitive Division 1. All of the divisions are competitive, but Division 1, there's nothing between the teams.
Yeah, I'd say it's never been more exciting really for the game itself, Marie, because nobody knows what's going to happen, really. And as you say, they've all tried the trial games, but as Eamon Fitzmaurice said there in his little piece, this is the real stress test, because they're competitive games now that we're obviously looking forward to. So I think it'll be absolutely brilliant. I've said many's a time here, Marie, GAA needed this so much. Like, I'm just a fan that tunes in, but Gaelic football was on its knees. It really was. It was so bad to watch as a spectacle. And from what I've seen of some of these trial games, I think it's going to be brilliant. But it's been crying out for it, because we have the hurling. We all tune into the hurling. I think you said there, it always delivers. It does. And the hurling has been carrying the GAA for the last number of years, really. So I think it's time for football to get back to the place where it wants to be and should be. And I think with the league that you've set up at the moment in Division 1, how competitive it is, it's hard. Normally we can pinpoint two or three that'll win in All-Ireland. And I know I'm like looking far ahead here, but the league campaign is always brilliant because it's so competitive. But this is the most competitive that I've ever seen, Marie, in terms of when you're looking at fixtures and trying to pick a winner. Every game is literally 50-50.
Well, we've been giving the Gaelic football and Brendan Devaney lots of love, so we better give some love to Shane McGrath as well, because you're on the line. Shane, it's great to have you back.
Great to be with you, lads.
Hello, Shane.
What's the crack, Ellen?
I'm good. Looking forward to a new season of hurling, and I'm sure you are as well.
100%, yeah, 100%. Not going out with many nights at the moment, so definitely.
We'll stay away from that, Shane.
Yeah. Shane, look, we were talking about football and how competitive and exciting it is, but the hurling is always that way. So look, when you're looking at the games that are coming this weekend, we know we're going to have some absolute crackers. And are we going to get a case where everyone's going to be going full strength and hell for leather and wanting to do well?
I don't think you can go full strength, Marie. Like, it's just the nature of it. The nature of the championship is that it's basically a league now as well, you know, for people that might know. Like, basically, your league now is Division 1A, Division 1B. You have 7 teams in both. So you have 6 games. And it's very similar to the round robin Munster Championship and Leinster Championship. So realistically, you can't ask guys, they're more senior players. You just can't ask them to get up to that level 6 or 7 times even before you get into maybe a 4 or 5 game round robin championship thing, where they just have to be at it week in, week out. So I think the league is, especially this year as well, as Alan's saying, very competitive, the 1A games, like 1B then, like for me, it's, you know, Dublin are going to be strong there in Waterford, and you're looking maybe what are Offaly and Antrim going to do there. But in 1A, you've got Wexford, Cork, Kilkenny, Clare, Tip, Galway and Limerick. So you have very competitive games every week. So I think a lot of those guys will look at the more senior guys and maybe pick a couple of target games, Marie. Maybe say, look, game 3, that's where we might get maybe 10, 11 of our guys, you know, rest them again. And then maybe your last game or your second last game in the league, try and go maybe as strong as you can for as long as you can. By that, I mean, have as close to your championship team maybe coming into the second last or the last game of the league. But I'd say it'll be incremental, the amount of more regular guys we'll see as the rounds go on. And you look at the lads who maybe 19, 20, 21, and they'll probably get a lot of chances in the first few rounds, I'd imagine, Marie.
Okay, so Shane, remind me again now, who won the league last year?
Not too sure. Some one of the Munster teams.
Might have been Clare, who went on to win the All-Ireland. Look, maybe.
Yeah, I believe so, Marie, yeah.
Like, there's a lot to be said for the momentum, though, and the psychological benefits of going out and performing really well consistently week after week.
I agree with you. I think the risk is nearly greater than the reward of winning the league. That, like, Clare won it, and look, obviously they went on and they did what they did, but I mean, like, after the Munster final, I was looking at Clare and I genuinely thought, this is it, the year could be done for them. And look, they obviously disproved that theory, unbelievable. But I just think the way, the nature of the team now, with the intensity of games, and they're coming so thick and fast, that yeah, winning the league is nice, but like, if I asked you who won the league 20, 30, 40 years ago, you'd struggle, but you'd really know who were All-Ireland champions those years. Like, so that's for me, I think it's that the risk of winning the league and getting to the league final, you're 2 weeks out from the first round championship. I think most lads would probably prefer to be fully right for championship anyway.
I managed to engineer a situation there where we were talking about Clare won the All-Ireland. That was very, very clever of me, Shane. But well, let's get back to the league fixtures, though. And you mentioned there are going to be some really competitive games. There does seem to be quite a lot of interest on this Clare-Kilkenny game in Cusick Park on Sunday. And one of the reasons, really, though, is Kilkenny and where they're at and how they've wintered and whether or not they've been able to maybe get through this transition period that they've gone through and are coming out as real contenders. I know it's very early in the year, but what do you think we're going to see from Kilkenny?
Well, people have to realise as well now, like say, Killian Buckley's not there this year, Conor Fogarty and Wally Walsh, who they've sold, they've All-Irelands, All-Stars, everything between them, you know, and they're great leaders in the dressing room. So, like, I was just looking through the Kilkenny panel, and I think since over the winter and in recent times, there's 15 new guys involved. And a lot of them would be the Kilkenny under-20 All-Ireland champions from 2022. So, like, you're looking at a lot of guys who are 21, 22 this year, and I'd say they're going to be... they're going to make up, you know, a lot of the new faces. They're kind of going to be guys who Derek Ling's going to look to in the league to see where they're at. Like, there's guys like, a lot of people know, like Paddy Langton and a guy called Harry Shine would have been, you know, they're being exceptional club hurlers, exceptional underage, brilliant playing hurling with Kieran's in the secondary schools. But the one guy for me this year, Maria, and a lot of people will know him, is a guy called Billy Drennan. And mm-hmm. He was on last year for the league. He didn't see much of him in the championship. He's, you know, he was kind of in a bulk up stage, and I'd say he's gone another level again. He's an unbelievable free taker. He's deadly accurate as well in open play. And I just think this year now could be a big year for him. Which, you know, like TJ's a year older. You can't keep asking TJ to do what he's been doing for Kilkenny. For me, he's the greatest hurler ever. And I just think maybe this guy, maybe a bit more faith now. Maybe Derek Lane will say to him this year, says, you know what, you are going to play in the league, but, you know, you do well in the league this year and I will give you time in the championship. Because he didn't really get time in the championship last year. And maybe, in fairness, Derek Lane, the management, they were kind of holding him back to kind of, you know, give him that experience and say, this year, here, off you go now. Here's your chance. If you want it, you can take it. But obviously, big boots to fill for TJ, but I think this guy is the guy to watch for Kilkenny this year, Billy Drennan anyway.
Yeah, well, somebody always steps up eventually in Kilkenny. It's just a case of when and who they are. So that'll be worth looking at. Galway and Tipperary.
Yeah, and they also have a Kerry hurler as well, Marie. Yeah. I know you're probably not aware of that. Like, yeah. A guy called Fionnán Maxey came from St. Brendan's in Ardfort.
He's starting.
With the Lachlans. And, like, he's starting wing back. Yeah. Big game for him now as well. Because, you know, he's going to feel like he's a lot to prove to other people, like, who, you know, with all due respect to Kerry hurling, I suppose you're coming up to, you know, the greatest place ever maybe for hurling, or one of them anyway, like in Kilkenny, and you're going to have to go above and beyond some of the locals to try and grab a jersey off one of them. So I think that'll be an interesting thing to watch out for as well as the league games go on.
Yeah, there isn't really a lot of room for error when you're a Kilkenny hurler, that's for sure. Okay, so what about Tip and Galway as well, Shane? Both teams who probably need to try and push on this year and just, I guess, develop and fulfil that bit of potential that's within the squads.
I just think, Marie, to be honest, they're in a similar situation, both panels. Like, it's almost like a period of change or, you know, experiment for both groups. Because I'd say, you know, if you gave them Hall Donoghue and Liam Cahill, the two managers, you know, you give them €1 million, say, would you be able to name your championship 15 now? And they'd both, they wouldn't, like... You know, that's where they're at. You know, if you take who's gone from Galway, Garrod McInerney, Joseph Cooney, Adrian Toohey. Like, Mihal Dunham had, I think it was 57 guys he called in for a training panel this year for Galway. So that just tells you know, he's out there, he's looking for him. He's had success before. For me, he's the right guy. I think Galway need a Galway guy in charge to get the culture up there and get the club and get the players. He just tried out 57 guys. He obviously has cut that now for the league. And Tip are similar in that. Bonner's gone, Dan McCorm was gone, Barry Heffernan's gone, Mark Keogh's gone travelling, and Cathal Barrett isn't involved this year either. And they had a couple of guys who maybe we thought were going to make the panel, but didn't make the panel as it was announced this week. So they're going to be, like Kilkenny, looking to younger guys. Well, Tipper anyway. I don't know about Galway really too much, but I know that Tipper are going to be looking to their 20s, the likes of Darren McCarthy, Sam O'Farrell, Oisín O'Donoghue, Conor Martin, Aaron O'Halloran, these guys. But the big thing, a great bonus for Tip as well, is Jamie Kendi is back. He ruptured his cruciate ligament there last year in March. And it's just a testament to everybody involved with him in the rehab he's doing, but to the guy himself to get back from a ruptured cruciate knee ligament injury within a year. It's just unreal where we are in sports science. But to get back to your question, Marie, I just think Tip and Galway need to get back to winning ways. And I think they need, Liam Cahill said himself, they just need the general public to get behind them again. It didn't end well for last year for Galway. It didn't end well for Tip either. And you can see the guys that have not involved this year. I just think the league is going to be used just to try and get back to winning ways and just try and figure out, right, where are we going with this group? What's our team going to look like? And look, they have 6 games to try and figure that out. So I genuinely could not call this one. You'd nearly favour Galway a small, but just the fact that it's on Pierce Stadium and they've got their new flashy lights up there as well, so that might be a factor. So.
Yeah, you got to impress under lights, Shane. You know all about that. The one, though, that I'm really looking forward to is Dublin and Antrim. And I guess it's probably the management tickets that are in place there and just seeing how they set up and the impact that both Davy Fitz and Niall O'Callaghan have made. How do you think that's going to go?
Yeah, the fact that it's on in Croker, I think, is good for the hurlers. I think there's, like, you know, I was up at the club finals last week, and I think, you know, it's class to see a club able to walk down to Croke Park, I suppose, for an All Ireland club final, which Na Fianna could. If people don't know geographically where it is, they're literally 5-10 minutes walk up the road, like, from Croke Park, and just to see them all walking down. So I think there's a bit of a buzz about Dublin hurling because of that, because it's their city club as well, Marie and stuff. I think Niall O'Callaghan is a very organised guy. He had a really good management team in around him. He came across very well in the way he spoke, and I'm sure there'll be a good bounce off that. And I think that the fact that they're starting off in Croke Park, bit of a crowd maybe in towards the end of it for the football. And look, I just think Antrim then with Davy, you're always going to get that bounce with Davy, that with being the new manager. He always gets it everywhere he goes, love him or loathe him. He just gets that great bounce from a group, and he will instill a confidence. I know myself personally from having him as a manager at college level and knowing the guy. He'll make it the world against those thing with Antrim that everybody wants to. No one's giving us any credit. Everyone thinks we're nearly done before it started, and he will get a bounce from him. But I just think Dublin hurling is in a good place, Marie. I think Na Fianna going on to win the club championship just kind of solidifies where the club hurling championship is at up there, and there's a lot of good hurlers there. If there was three guys I'd mention, I think Dermot O'Dooling, I hope I mentioned his name right. I think he's a serious talent. I think Brian Hayes and John Bailey had very good years last year, and they'll carry that form in. And as the weeks go on, we'll see the Na Fianna boys coming back as well. So, look, it's a big year for Niall. You know, he was a relatively unknown maybe in the outside of Dublin up to recent times, and now he's an All-Ireland winning club manager. And you just got to carry that on now with the senior hurlers, and sure, we know what we're going to get from Davy. I just think it'll be box office, and it'll be brilliant. Like,
absolutely, Shane. Thank you so much. Enjoy chatting to you as always. Great to have you back, and looking forward to the next. What are we now? January. 7 months. Have we 7 months of Shane?
Look, I tell you what. If I have to get another few school closures and stay at home for a full day with my kids, I'm going to lose my mind. So I just hope we get
stop that,
good
Shane. You've a great life, yeah, teachers. Yeah,
let's not go there. Shane McGrath, thanks a million.
Thanks, lads.
Talk to you soon. We're going to take a break. Jane Mangan is standing by to set us up for the racing weekend, and Alan is going to talk us through all of the Premier League action after these. RTE 2FM. Now, welcome back. I'm delighted to say that Jane Mangan is standing by. Jane, have you survived the weather?
Just about, yeah. We've been fine down here in Cork, relatively unscathed compared to the west of Ireland. We didn't lose power and we didn't lose water. So I think we can count ourselves lucky this time around.
Yeah, absolutely. And the racing is going ahead this weekend, which is great. And I know that you're looking forward, particularly to what's going to happen in Cheltenham and Constitution Hill in the National Hurdle.
Yeah, it's look, Dundalk was lost tonight, but we are fortunate. I think Fairy House on tomorrow, Sol Arena Hurdle Day, and Nace, I'll be there on Sunday with some good races here at home. But we'll start at Cheltenham. It is trials day tomorrow. Trial is a word, but I don't think it's going to be much of a trial for Constitution Hill in the International Hurdle tomorrow. He's 1-12 in his career so far. He's won 8 grade ones, he's 9 from 9. He's pretty much the perfect racehorse, but we haven't seen a lot of him. So as much as we might lament the uncompetitive nature of tomorrow's race, at least we're going to get to see the best hurdler there is in training.
And there's a couple of other good races as well overseas, Jane, with the Cotswold Chase and the Cleve Hurdle as well.
Yeah, there's plenty of Irish interest. The Cotswold Chase declared runner 6. Long Press is a favourite at around odds on as well. He was 3rd in his season reappearance in the King George. But Miles Morris is sending across Gentleman's Game, who was 3rd to gallop in the Champ at Leopardstown when he was last seen. And Gordon Elliott couldn't really run Delta Work in the Kinloch Braid Thurles last Sunday. The ground was a bit quick, so he lines up here. And the Cleve Hurdle is usually a trial for the stairs. Crambo, Hidden Valley Lake, left that form down badly yesterday. Strong leader, first run after a wind up. Gala, Mon Morale, that looks like a decent enough race. And the other race that might catch people's attention is the Triumph Hurdle Trial. So it's the juvenile race where East India Dock is currently 2 from 2 in his races so far. This will be a good test of him with a view to March. And I will be on track here at home on Sunday. I'll be in Naas, where we talked about Constitution Hill and his uncompetitive champion hurdle trial. A horse called Anzadam, who is no Constitution Hill yet, but he is 3 from 3. He's a definitely an unquantifiable horse. It's difficult to understand just how good he could be. But he's in a 3-runner race, the Limestone Lad Hurdle, for which he really should kick these out of the way. Beacon Edge and Lastly are decent horses, but this guy looks like he could be particularly good. That's at 2 o'clock on Sunday. And the other feature race on the day is at 2:30. It's the Naas Novice Chase, the Grade 3 over 3 miles. 5 declared runners, Bioluminescence, Dancing City, Di Capo and Goodland. The 4 of them are quite solid horses, Bioluminescence being a very good mare who won at Limerick over Christmas. Dancing City is a 3-time Grade 1 winner over hurdles, as Goodland is also a Grade 1 winner over hurdles. So that is actually quite a tidy race. I think even the maiden hurdles at Naas on Sunday are quite decent. So I'm looking forward to going there.
Very good, Jane. Well, you enjoy that and stay safe, and we will talk to you again next week. Thank you so much, as always. Alan Colley, as well as hurling, Gaelic football, racing and lots of other stuff. There's Premier League action this weekend as well.
There's always Premier League action. There's always Premier League action.
Look, it's a big one. Chelsea, Man City, 4th, 5th.
Yeah, it's a big one, but not for maybe the honours that we were expecting at the start of the season. As you say, 4th and 5th, we probably thought Man City would be fighting it out with Liverpool at the top of the league. But and Chelsea have been a bit of a, I wouldn't say a surprise package, but nobody was probably envisaging with Maresca and what he was inheriting and how they were going to go. But I think they've been very good, Chelsea. I watched Man City during the week against PSG, Marie, and for anyone that thinks they're back, they're not back. They're far from it. They're way off the pace, and a revamp of that squad is needed badly, just particularly out of possession. They're so easy to get at. The energy, the intensity that we associate with Man City out of possession and the high press, all that is gone now. They can't do it anymore. They just don't have the legs. And I know they've had a bit of a resurgence. They've won their last 3 or 4 games, but it's against teams you'd be expecting them to beat. And they will beat the lowly ranked teams in the Premier League till now in the end of the season. But when they come up against the big boys, and Chelsea, I would class as one of them in the league at the moment, I think they'll struggle. I think Chelsea will beat them tomorrow, even though it's away from home.
I know you're interested as well in Bournemouth and Nottingham Forest.
Yeah, just because it's not really all that fashionable a fixture with Bournemouth and Nottingham Forest, but one is sitting third in the league, and one, I think, the Bournemouth manager is probably the most impressive manager I've seen all season, Iriola. They're unbeaten in 8, Forest. They've won 7 out of 8. Unbelievable run, and that one draw was against Liverpool last week. And Bournemouth are unbeaten in 10. They've won 6 and drawn 4. When you consider the resources of what Iriola is working off at Bournemouth, it's phenomenal what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And the same with Nuno. A few more resources, or maybe a lot more resources at Forest, but still nothing like the top 6 or 7 clubs you'd expect. And what he's doing to have them in the top 3 at the moment, Marie, is phenomenal. So I think that'll be a cracker of a game tomorrow. The story is really, can Forest maintain it and stay in that top 4? That would be an unbelievable achievement. But I think for Bournemouth as well, they should be aiming high to get into that maybe top 6. And I think as well, you may get 5 places for Champions League this year also. So that's a target for them if they can maintain that. But I think that'll be a good game tomorrow.
Do Bournemouth and Nottingham Forest have better resources than Manchester United?
Manchester United, whatever, but Man City not being nowhere near the level. Man United are not even in the conversation.
Is it just the players? Is the players just not good enough?
Yeah, I'm not all that impressed with the manager either. Okay. But in fairness to him, he has inherited a poor group of players. But I still think he could be doing better. But Rangers, a depleted Rangers, pushed him all the way last night. And Rangers are so poor, to be honest with you, Marie. But Man United are worse. And you look at the game last night as well, and in terms of them going forward, like, I don't know where they're going. I really don't. And it's a struggle for him at the moment as well, the manager. Like, as much as he was coming across impressive at the start and speaking well, he looks like he's shattered already with it. Like, it's really difficult what he's trying to impose on them. So it's a mess. Off the pitch is a mess as well. You look at the trouble in the stands last night as well with Old Trafford. Stuff you'd never associate, allowing a load of Rangers fans into the home ground. I know I was listening to a podcast recently of a fans forum, and they're giving out stink about the price.